Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hi, I'm John McEnroe.
I'm Bjorn Borg.
This is Martina Navratilova.
I'm Mats Wilander.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
And you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Well, hello and welcome to the US Open and the Tennis Podcast. My name is David Law. I'm here for BBC Radio 5 Live. Joining me this week, of course, will be Catherine Whittaker, who's here for Eurosport, and of course, Simon Briggs from The Telegraph, because we are produced in association with The Telegraph, and Simon and myself currently stand in the player garden where all the players are doing their interviews just a couple of days before the start of the 2016 US Open, and it is a hive of activity right now. It is funny, isn't it, watching the way it all operates, Simon? You know, we're 2 days away. It's kind of the phony war, isn't it? You've got all these players who are going to be beating the living daylights out of each other in a couple of days' time. They're all rubbing shoulders in the sunshine. They're all doing their interviews, probably trying to keep their voices down so that their prospective opponents can't hear how their chances are looking and all the rest of it.
And the broadcaster's challenge is to probably fade out the sound of the planes going overhead from LaGuardia Airport. We're right underneath the flight path here, but it's pretty sweltering out here as well, so most of the players are trying to compete to see who can get to the umbrellas first.
It always used to be a lot worse, actually, the flight path here. If you go back maybe 20 years ago, certainly in the 90s, I remember the flight path was such that matches were just getting drowned out, and then eventually the mayor of New York changed the flight path so that it didn't collide with the US Open anymore, and they also built the Arthur Ashe Stadium so that the smell of hot dogs and hamburgers didn't drift over the centre court during the action. So it's all changed a bit, but some things don't change, and certainly the excitement, I think, ahead of the final Grand Slam tournaments of the year is as palpable as ever. I mean, is that how it feels to you? How long have you been here?
I got here on Tuesday. I think I came from Rio, and that was a pretty intense couple of weeks as well. So we came into New York, and there's a slight sense of the sort of demolition derby about it, because we went to the press day on Friday, and there was one wrist injury after the other, with Novak Djokovic followed by Rafael Nadal, and then Serena Williams talking about her shoulder falling off. I've just written a piece.
I'm assuming that's a slight exaggeration.
I think it is still attached to her body, but nobody sounded altogether like they were completely ready. Of course, that could be a little bit of short selling on their part, just to make sure that they're not talking themselves up. Rather be underestimated going in than the other way around. Andy Murray, even we said to him, well, isn't this an opportunity? And he was sort of replying, well, I'm pretty tired too, you guys. Just because I don't have a headline injury doesn't mean that I'm not feeling the pace after 50-odd matches in that unbelievable Olympic final a couple of weeks ago. So everyone's slightly gathering their energies for the last big push, I guess.
It is one of those strange years, isn't it? Every 4 years we have the Olympics and it changes the dynamic, the order of things in the summertime, a gap between Toronto or Montreal and Cincinnati. That's what's happened here. We've had Murray missing Toronto, then playing the Olympics in Cincinnati. We've had Djokovic missing out on Cincinnati, and obviously, as you say, those concerns over his wrist injury. I mean, we really don't know how any of these players are going to look, do we, when things start on Monday?
Yeah, that's the unpredictability of the US Open. It has been the biggest tournament for surprises of late. Marin Cilic winning in 2014. We were just talking to Juan Martín del Potro. It's a while ago now, but he won here in 2009. It is perhaps the tournament of the surprise. And this fortnight in particular, you feel that it really is pretty open. The women's in particular, if Serena is not able to serve at 100%, and Kerber's pushing for the number one ranking, but there's so many players who could win the women's title, I think.
Yeah, there are a lot of players, aren't there? It feels open. I mean, but the funny thing is, if you were to go back a year ago, it didn't look open at all in the women's draw. You thought Serena's going to win this title. She's going to complete the calendar slam, and that didn't happen. So for all we know, she could turn up this week and be fine. And I mean, like at Wimbledon, suddenly it'll all click.
Yeah, and then she has actually been her most consistent self in New York in recent years. That was the first time she'd lost in four, I think, when she went down to Roberta Vinci here last year in what was probably the shock result of the year. And then Flavia Panetta took over and won the title. I've seen her around, but she's not actually in contention anymore.
One of the many
women's winners of the last 4 or 5 years who have pretty much quit as soon as they got their biggest prize of their career.
Yeah, that was a strange conclusion to the title last year, wasn't it? She wins the title and basically announces her retirement on the spot in the ceremony. I mean, that was certainly memorable, but it was... I'd almost forgotten about her until I saw her at the sort of draw ceremony a couple of days ago. And that draw in particular, who do you think on the men's side has come out looking good? Do you think it is clearly weighted in favour of one of the players?
Yeah, I think for the third slam in a row, I think Andy's had a really good draw. He's got Dimitrov and Nishikori on his horizon, Vavrinka in the semi-final theoretically. Rafa and Novak are both in the top half, and so are some of the more dangerous floaters, including Del Potro. Kyrgios on the bottom half, that's sort of one added ingredient. But I think he'd have to beat Vavrinka for Murray to play him. So even then, that's almost a win-win situation. So yeah, Andy's had some tough draws, maybe going back a couple of years, but this summer. And this year, he's obviously reached three slam finals coming in here. That's another stat that if he gets here to the final, he'll be the fifth man to have done it in the Open era. Roger twice, Novak once, and Rod Laver once. So that's testament to his consistency. And he's had a slightly better draws this year.
Yeah, sometimes you need a little bit of luck to go with it, don't you? Now, we know that you always pick Andy Murray to win the title. So is that the same this time?
I guess, yeah. I spoke to Mats Wilander this week, and he said that he rates Andy as his favourite, and he's never done that before for a slam title.
The book is marginally calling it for Djokovic still. They're still just that little bit hesitant, aren't they, to take into account even the Murray form, even the Djokovic suggestions of injury. I mean, how do you back against the guy? But I think if you were to maybe poll the majority of journalists here, I think the greater weight of them, even the non-British journalists, would probably be picking Murray right now.
Yeah, actually, I didn't realise it was that close in the bookies. I always assume that Novak has a big lead there by pure consistency of achievement. Here comes Catherine, having dealt with Dan Evans summarily. You put him to shame, I hope.
Hello, Catherine. I tell you what we've already talked about so far, as Catherine Whittaker from Eurosport joins us, hot-footing it from her interview with Dan Evans, who's one of the eight British players in the main draw. I can barely keep count. Simon's been talking about Andy Murray's chances. He's obviously picking him. He's given us an update on Novak Djokovic. So what we'll do right now is we'll just change Simon Briggs for Catherine Whittaker, because Simon's off to go and do another bit of work. You'll read all about his interview with Juan Martín Del Potro in Monday's Telegraph. And, of course, he'll be making regular appearances with us here on the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with the Telegraph. And Catherine, thankfully, it's you and me again, and Simon Briggs has gone.
He's off to enjoy the air conditioning, isn't he? That's what he's doing.
Yes, I arrived in a coat. I've just arrived from the airport, and I arrived in a coat. And I mean, Catherine's not exactly unused to giving me looks of disdain, but the one she greeted me with just about 10 minutes ago really topped the lot. How are you, Catherine? How have your last couple of days been? You've been here for Eurosport, I imagine doing lots of interviews in this incredible area that is set up for exactly that purpose. It's a sort of, there's artificial grass laid down just outside where the players get their rackets strung, and the gymnasium and the locker rooms, and there's upstairs to the player lounge, and we are surrounded right now. We're standing next to, first of all, a sort of smoothie maker and a coffee shop, and then there are lots of little benches and tables, and I mean there are dozens of television cameras and players milling around being interviewed.
Yeah, this media garden area here at Flushing Meadows is one of the most remarkable places for me on the tennis tour, because I remember when I came here to work as a journalist for the first time last year, they're so hot on security here, and no ma'am, you can't go there, no ma'am, that's forbidden. And I was so surprised at how free and easy it was, and it was just, you know, journalists are just, you know, once you're in, go wherever you like. Yeah, there's all the players' locker rooms. Yeah, you can go there, you can go there, whatever. You know, we were going up to scope out filming locations at the top of Arthur Ashe Stadium earlier, and it was fine. We were being ushered up there, just wandering around the most glorious view in tennis, and we could go wherever we wanted.
Hey, that's something we haven't talked about, Simon and I, is the renovations this year. I mean, I've just come in on the sort of media shuttle bus from Manhattan. It's sort of half an hour drive, and then suddenly in the distance you see the Arthur Ashe Stadium, and yet it looks like something that's come from another planet, because it's got a dome on top of it, a roof on top of it. Plus, is it the grandstand court that's been renovated as well? I mean, that looks spectacular.
More than brand new grandstand court, brand new. I love the design of it. I'm going to sound like I'm working for USTA PR now, but I think they have done a truly sensational
job. And we've
job.
Given them their fair share of stick over the years,
yeah,
because
exactly.
They've deserved it, for, yeah. Quite honestly. But you're right. I mean, they've really pulled their finger out, pulled the stops out.
They've pulled their wallet out as well. I've heard half a billion dollars have been spent all in all, which is no...
That should do it.
No insubstantial fee. But look, it shows. It's been done properly. The roof is amazing. It's sort of a canopy which sits... So you go up to the top... and it still feels open. You're up at the top there, you've still got the breeze, it still feels open air. I can imagine, even with the roof closed, you're still going to be able to retain some of the open air feel, which I think is incredible. And the grandstand court, the design of it, it's really beautiful. It's really architecturally beautiful. I'm blown away. I think it's great.
That's great to hear. And I think they're going to do something similar with the Louis Armstrong court in a year or two. So this place is really, really going places. I mean, I spoke to Stephen Farrow, our tournament director at the Aegon Championships, a couple of days ago, who's been here a few days as well, and he was saying that there's lots more permanent seating as well, and it just feels like that the whole place has had the makeover it's needed.
Yeah, they've caught up very quickly. There is no doubt they were behind, and all the other Grand Slams, possibly with the exception of Paris, but they have enormous spacious issues there, and of course they are building the roof, albeit slowly compared to here. You know, they realised, perhaps a little too late, that they were falling behind, and boy, have they made up for lost time. It feels like they've done this work incredibly quickly. It's like, I mean, maybe that's just how things are in New York. Two days ago, I was in the taxi from the airport, and the New York skyline was coming into view, and I realised there was an enormous skyscraper, bigger than the Empire State Building, that's just been knocked up in a year. It literally was not there. The biggest building in New York was not there 12 months ago. They've built it in a year. I understand apartments in there are a minimum of $20 million, so...
Oh, we'll be all right. And if we maybe put together, get a tennis podcast pad in the richest building in the world, eh?
One day.
Get one... Maybe we'd probably get one brick, I reckon, if we put it together. Catherine, before we start talking draws and press conferences and all the interviews you've been doing, just one other thing that you'll see if you do happen to be coming to the US Open over the next couple of weeks, you'll have the opportunity to buy. You may remember this from our French Open preview show. We were talking about Racquet magazine, the print-only tennis magazine. They were sponsoring us. They're sponsoring us again just for our preview show here as well. But, you know, we just want to also give them a mention, because of the fact that they are out now. They're in print, they're in the on the bookshelves. You can get a copy if you're at the US Open in the bookstore here. I mean, it is a spectacular front cover they've got in this premier edition of the magazine. They've got Yannick Noah illustrated in there against the clearly the French Open backdrop in full flow, and it's a glorious sight. You'll see lots of wonderful articles in Racquet magazine. You can get a copy on their website. You can subscribe to the four-issue series for the year on racquetmag.com. I should say that's racquet spelt correctly with the CQ rather than the CK. I'm a traditionalist.
BBC journalist David Law.
Yeah, so racquetmag.com if you want to subscribe, get it delivered straight to you. Wonderful print-only coffee table magazine. You can also get it in various places in New York. There are one or two retailers in New York you can get it. And also in London at Mag Culture on St. John Street if you happen to be in London. But you can also get it online, racquetmag.com, and you can get it at the US Open. Catherine Mitchell.
Yeah, I think we feel a kinship with what they're doing because, you know, they're tennis fans, they're doing it off their own bat. Yes, they're hoping to make some money from it, but they're doing it out of a love for the game, and, you know, they're doing it, and that's sort of what we're trying to do with this podcast, isn't it? So, though we say so ourselves, I think it should be commended.
Yes, even if they are sponsoring us, we still believe it. Even if they are sponsoring us. Anyway, Catherine, so the US Open. The US Open is about to start. 2 days away. I mean, it's such an exciting prospect, and there are so many storylines going to unfold over the next couple of weeks. Your immediate response to the draw, both the men's and the women's, did anything really stand out to you? Simon's mentioned that he feels that Andy Murray, for a third slam in the row, has got lucky, in his view, in terms of the relative strengths of the routes through to the latter stages for the players. The thing that really struck me, I think, was that early on, Rafael Nadal's draw looked all right. And then suddenly, if he were to get to the quarters, he'd be looking at Raonic, and then the semis maybe Djokovic, and then the final Murray.
Well, what struck me on the men's side was looking through the draw, I was trying to think, who's got the awful draw here? Who's got all the big guys that are in form and that you don't want to face? And then I suddenly realised that it's not that kind of tournament this time. There aren't, you know, the big four that, you know, you don't want to be drawn in the same side of the draw as two of them. That's, you know, it's obviously worse than having only to face one of them. No one, you know, the stats about no one's ever beaten all three of them en route to winning a title, all that sort of thing. That's not the case this tournament. I don't think there's any horror show of a draw out there because everybody, barring mostly Andy Murray, although I suppose you could say there's a bit of a could he be exhausted question mark over him, everybody has a question mark over them. You know, I really wasn't sure about Novak Djokovic in press yesterday, certainly not wanting to give much away about that wrist. He won't even say exactly what the injury is. I'm sure a certain amount of that is game playing. He doesn't want to give away to his opponents what the injury is, but certainly I don't think all is 100% there. You know,
that's certainly what he said, isn't it? He said he's trying his best to get to be as close to 100% as he can when the tournament starts. Now again, you're quite right, that he may be absolutely fine for all we know. Why should he tell us every single thing that's going on?
But certainly expectations are being played down to a certain degree there, that is without question. He has cancelled practices, but then I understand he also stays at a place which has a tennis court, so it's entirely possible that he could be just choosing to practice in private away from prying eyes instead of doing so here at Flushing Meadows. So, I mean, frankly, no one knows, but that's why it's a big question mark, and in a way there hasn't been previously. And then you look at, with Federer gone, you go down the draw, obviously there's a question mark over Rafael Nadal. The last time we saw him, he was retiring in Cincinnati with not one but two injuries. Stan Wawrinka is always an unknown. He could win the tournament or he could crash out first round, putting in a horror show performance. You know.
And also, my pick to have this great run at the US Open is Marin Cilic. As I said in the last show, I felt that he would get to the semi-finals. Then suddenly, you realise he's in the quarter with Novak Djokovic, who has a 14-0 record against him. Now, I still think Cilic is playing 2014 US Open tennis right now, which could be the match for just about anybody. But he's never beaten Djokovic. He has...
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door.
Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right. Come close at Wimbledon that year. In fact, he led him 2-1, but you know, he usually has his way pretty handily, does Djokovic, with Cilic.
Yeah, and you know, I hark back to Toronto, which reminded me, you know, those matches, Thomas Burdick against Novak Djokovic, Kei Nishikori against Novak Djokovic, Gael Monfils, how difficult it is, even when you're playing well, even when you're playing better than your opponent, to overcome mental baggage like that. The mental baggage of a 14-0 record is just enormous. I think that could be the decisive factor, even if Marin Cilic were playing lights-out tennis and Djokovic is slightly hampered in the way we think he possibly might be that. So it's disappointing for Cilic.
I was also particularly surprised by Djokovic revealing in his press conference that there were personal reasons at play for him not playing at his best at Wimbledon. I was really surprised regardless of whether it's the case or not. I mean, everybody has personal issues in their life. Usually, though, tennis players don't hint that there are any.
Yeah, it was a fantastic question, actually, from Paul Newman of The Independent that drew that answer out of Djokovic. I think everybody in the room was a little bit taken aback, but the way the question was phrased sort of, I don't know, didn't back him into a corner, but I think a bit like I've seen so many times with Grigor Dimitrov in press conferences, I don't think he intended to be as frank as he ended up being. When he opened his mouth to speak, it just sort of tumbled out. And he says whatever it was is now resolved. In what way, you don't know. I mean, we really don't know any other details. But yeah, it was a startling moment of frankness, I suppose.
Yeah, we like a bit of candour here on the Tennis Podcast, almost as much as we like a bit of aggro and a pole vault. But anyway, Catherine won't let me do any of those, so we'll just go with candour. In the women's draw, Catherine, I managed to get a sneak preview listen of a little interview that Simon has done with Angelique Kerber. Which will be in the Telegraph on Monday, which was very interesting. Can't give you all the details, obviously, but she sounds like she's in a good place. I know she's had a couple of heartbreakers in terms of on-paper losses in both the Olympics and Cincinnati, but, you know, I'd be surprised if she bombed, you know. Whereas with Garbiñe Muguruza, you get these extraordinary peaks and then these real troughs and dips, often straight afterwards. We're not getting that really with Kerber. We had a blip, didn't we, in the sort of springtime, and she didn't play that well on the clay, apart from Stuttgart. But, you know, she's consistently producing and getting to the latter stages.
Yeah, I agree. It would be a real surprise if she bombed in the way that it wasn't in Paris, necessarily. She just seems so relaxed. I saw her earlier. She was doing an interview. So our German Eurosport counterparts, my colleagues, I suppose, they have... on the continent, they have quite different sort of editorial guidelines, editorial standards. They like to do something a bit funky, different camera shots. She was just sat down on the grass with Matthias, the German Eurosport presenter. They were just doing an interview, just sat on the grass here in the media garden, like it was sort of a school picnic or something. She could not have looked more chilled out. I saw her wander over for the interview and he was like, oh, we're going to do it sitting down on the grass over there, if that's right. And she was like, okay, yeah, that's fine. I mean, can you imagine Serena Williams doing that? I don't know, actually.
Do you know, sometimes I tend to think with some of these players that because we don't expect that they will, we don't ask. And I sometimes think if we just chilled out a bit ourselves with them and spoke to them like we would anybody else, they'd probably be game for all sorts of relaxed settings, you know. And they like I actually think, you know, they don't mind a bit of normality, these tennis players.
I
wouldn't mind a picnic right now, that you mention it.
Having said that, I did just see Barry Flatman of The Times greet Dan Evans with the words, "How are Villa doing? Still SH star T."
Well, and, you know, you only have to look at the results. That's all I'm saying. Catherine, you have obviously been here for a couple of days. What is the feeling like this year? You were here last year when we had all hype around Serena. And she reached the semis, but the final had sold out, hadn't it, ahead of the men's. Everybody's thinking calendar slam. Now she could get something equally in many ways as significant, maybe not as dramatic in terms of beating Steffi's record, but you know it would still be a major deal. What are you sensing around her right now?
I worry about the shoulder. She didn't say anything about it in press, but that almost told the story. She was very, very... It started off a very tetchy press conference with a lot of one-word answers. She warmed up a little bit. She definitely didn't want to say an awful lot. She said she admitted that, you know, she does not have the match practice she needs. But, hey, we've seen her win Grand Slams with zero match practice going in, so that's not necessarily a decisive factor. But I just got the sense that she had potentially a doubt in her mind. That doesn't mean she's not going to win the tournament. It just means she's not as nailed on as she was. I think there's pressure. I think she wants it desperately. I think she wants to do it here desperately. I don't think it's quite the same pressure as last year. I mean, last year it was everything. It was the defining feature of the tournament.
And you saw it in that documentary, didn't you? And we then got that incredible insight with the camera following her behind the scenes and her admitting and showing how much it was all bothering her. I mean, it was an enormous pressure.
Yeah, I don't think it's quite that, but I think it's a lot. And, you know, we now know how much she feels the pressure. So even if it is less, she'll still be feeling it. And she's still... I mean, it's so obvious still, even with her being tetchy and not really wanting to chat to the press, she still gave away how much she wants it. She still couldn't help herself saying how hungry she is to get this one and to get it here.
Yeah, we're just going to have to keep our voices down a little bit here in the media garden because Pierre-Hugues Hébert, who's a player who I've learned to pronounce the name of correctly and therefore I'm doing it with great relish, is just sitting over to my right here. We've got Kristina Mladenovic as well here.
His mixed doubles partner, yeah.
Yeah, so there's all sorts of players just pottering around. We've just had one Martin Del Potro doing interviews that you'll be reading over the next couple of days as well. We don't want to get in the way of these interviews, but equally, we're just going to keep talking here on the tennis podcast. Catherine, the great story from a British perspective, aside from Andy Murray, we've obviously got Joe Konta returning, but the really great one came yesterday with Laura Robson qualifying for this tournament, a place that she had her biggest results at, in my view, 4 years ago when she beat Kim Clijsters, retired Kim Clijsters, and then beat Linar. Was it Linar she beat? I can't remember. Yes, it was Linar she beat. And then she eventually went out. But, I mean, you know, Sam Stosur it was who beat her in the end that year. And, I mean, I know a number of people that wondered whether she would ever be able to get back on the stage. Now, I know she's only won 8 matches in a row. I know these are embryonic stages in her comeback. But I think that she was shuffling around the futures circuit, really, not winning close matches, and then suddenly she's won a tournament. And now suddenly she's won three in a row and qualified. And I think back to Jo Konta a year ago building a run like that. Now, we're in much earlier stages here, but I just think it's really heartwarming.
Yeah, and one of those doubters was me, for sure. I mean, I really doubted her stomach for going out to futures events with nobody watching, no prize money, no attention. You know, she's used to having big sponsors and TV cameras on her and people interested in watching her and all of that. And I can only imagine how hard it is to go to the exact opposite and be thrashing around in the middle of nowhere. I doubted her stomach for it, and she's really, really proved me wrong. I mean, the story is amazing that she won that USTA event in Philadelphia, or certainly in Pennsylvania, and didn't know that that would be enough to get her a wild card into qualies, had written off the possibility of getting into qualies here, went on a holiday with friends in Italy. She said in her quotes after qualifying yesterday, she got the call while she was about to climb. She was in Pompeii, climbed Mount Vesuvius, came down Mount Vesuvius, drove her friends back to the villa, and then hopped on a plane to New York and started playing qualies here and is now done. I mean, it's a great story, but also an indication of how much her mental framework has changed, how much the references, the touchstones of her career have changed. You know, she hadn't even contemplated being able to make it into US Open qualies. You know, what a different story that is to her being talked about as the next big thing, you know. So well done her.
Yeah, well done her. And she plays a fellow Brit, one of eight in the draws here, both men and women. Plays Naomi Brody in the first round. We'll monitor those matches closely. There's also Heather Watson and, of course, Dan Evans, who you've just been speaking to, Aliash Bedene. We've got Carl Edmund, Heather Watson, and Andy Murray, of course. So it really isn't Jo Konta. So it's an amazing lineup for a country. I know it may not seem very many to listeners from the US or France, and we have many of those, I'm happy to say, here on the Tennis Podcast, but for someone like me, who came here for the first time 13 years ago, and in that year I went to my first Grand Slam tournament overseas for Five Live, and we had one British player did the country, and that was Elena Baltacha, who managed to get into that draw and won a match as well, I seem to recall. But you know, it's a good news story from a British perspective that there are so many of them. I don't necessarily think there will be that many in the second round. We'll have to
That's
see.
That's for sure. There will be one.
But anyway, from a British perspective, it's nice to see. We try to keep as objective as we can, but obviously we are British journalists, and they are people that will fill our airwaves and broadcasts, and obviously the podcast to a degree as well. So, Catherine, with a couple of days still to go, one question I posed on Twitter. It's not a pole vault, so stop looking at me like that. It was an open-ended question about night sessions here at the US Open, which are what basically got me into the sport. Night sessions here at the US Open, they made me want to work in this sport. Jimmy Connors and Aaron Krikstein, 1991 and all that. What's your favourite night match memory? Have you got one? Or do you want to have a think about it while I list a few from our listeners? And my word, there are a few of them. Listen to a few of these. Clara says, the US Open of 2009, the Federer-Djokovic semi-final, the tweener. The atmosphere was amazing. What about this one from Ibudin, who says, the Agassi-Blake match of 2005, that does have to be one of the all-time great night session matches for me. We've got here Nemini, who says Capriati Enan 2003 semi-final. I remember that was my first US Open, and little anecdote about that one, Catherine. Little anecdote. Straight after that match, I was sent down to the locker room area to see who I could interview, and I came across Chandler from Friends, who was in the Jennifer Capriati support box.
Matthew Perry. Player, handy tennis player.
Yeah, he was. Well, he wasn't happy to speak to me. I tried my best, you know. It wasn't interesting.
Is it because you greeted him as Chana from Friends?
Should I have not done that. Because no, he did look at me as though I was a piece of muck. which some would argue I am. Agassi Sampras, 2001 night session, is a memorable one as well for Nemanja. And we've also got Joel, who says, what about the Venus Hingis semi-final of 2000? Pure excitement from start to finish. Could have gone either way. We've also got Andy Millard, who remembers Murray Djokovic 2012 final for obvious reasons, he says. Of course, Murray winning that one in five sets. Sporty Baba says Jimmy Connors matches from 1991. Pick whichever one you want. And I would go along with that. Absolutely right. Greg Gaynor remembers Carlos Moya against Todd Martin, with Martin high-fiving members of the crowd in the front row, only won in five sets. There was the Djokovic-Federer final of last year, remembers Jonathan Woodrow. We've also got just a couple more to finish off here. We've got Ali, who reminds me of Capriati and the 2003 semi-final with Anand. One of the best matches ever, she says. And actually, my personal favourite comes from our very own student Matt, who is currently gallivanting around the world, calling it
year abroad,
whatever it is. Yeah, student Matt's doing that, but he's still getting involved in the podcast, I'm happy to say. And he remembers another one of my personal favourites, and I would probably go with this as my favourite: Agassi against Baghdatis, 2006. Oh. Agassi's final year, and this is what student Matt says: cortisone injection, boisterous, raucous crowd, brilliant tennis, career on the line, racket smashes, comeback, fifth set, cramps, back pain, great respect of the end. It was just awesome. That is what student Matt has to say about things, and I wholeheartedly agree with him.
I don't disagree. I have one other entry, possibly a bit random, but it just sprung to my mind, but probably quite a personal memory. I don't know. I think it was 2002 quarterfinals, Andy Roddick just breaking onto the scene. Leighton Hewitt was the incumbent world number one, and it went to a fifth set. And, you know, I think, was it in the visor day? I think it was even pre-visor.
No, it was pre-visor. It was a great rant, wasn't it, from Roddick?
The pre-Hawkeye as well, and the match seemed to turn, inexperienced as Roddick was at the time, on an overrule by George Diaz, the umpire, on the far sideline, which, according to inaccurate video replays, did look to be a dodgy overall, quite frankly. Roddick went nuts. I mean, it just had everything. It had everything. And Hewitt went on to win the tournament. And, of course, Roddick went on to win the tournament as well a couple of years later. So all was well. No, 1 year later, in fact. 1 year later, 2003
won the title, yeah.
So, yeah, that's the one that jumped out at me. Not necessarily the best one, but just, it was just when I was getting really into tennis. It was just when I was staying up through the night to watch tennis on the telly, like a proper loser. So, yeah, that's why that one stands out for me.
Yeah, well, I've been a loser for at least 10 years before that, so, you know, I win. It's funny, you know, remembering that Roddick rant and his determination that there should be some video call technology. And then you think back to our podcast with him 2 years ago, or whatever it was, at the Royal Albert Hall. If you go and have a listen, it's still available on our website to listen to the Andy Roddick show that we had, in which he said, yeah, he thinks Hawkeye works really well. It sort of does what it's supposed to, but he thinks tennis should get rid of it after all that.
They're fickle creatures, aren't they, tennis players?
As soon as they retire, yeah. You know, they just think of the aggro and the entertainment that you get from not having accurate calls every 5 minutes. Well, Catherine Whittaker, is there anything else for us to talk about before we head off into the sunset and just try and get a last bit of rest in before the US Open gets underway?
Loads, probably, but we'd better not peak too soon. We've got to do a lot of these over the next fortnight, so let's leave some stuff still to be talked about.
Just quickly, who have you interviewed so far for Eurosport in your couple of days here?
Oh, it's been a Brit-tastic couple of days. So Murray just did Dan Evans. He didn't have a whole lot to say. Maybe he's trying to stay focused.
Man a few words, Catherine Whittaker. Let his racket do the talking.
Let his racket do the talking.
And his Villa supporting.
Joe Konta, who else? Heather Watson was in bubbly mood, very bubbly mood. Yeah, she's full of the joys. And Kyle Edmund, who was delightful, very nice young man, Kyle.
Excellent. So we're ready now, are we? Are we ready for this US Open to get underway now that I've arrived?
Well, there's three. I've still got to interview three more, but I'm still trying to track down Aliash Bednay, who is playing Nick Kyrgios, and they share a manager, an agent, so that's going to be interesting. I still need to chat to Naomi Brody, who plays
Laura Robson.
And we need to chat to Laura Robson after her practice tomorrow.
That'll be interesting, won't it? See what she's got to say.
It's a Brit Fest.
It's a Brit Fest for Catherine Whittaker of Eurosport. I'll be here for BBC Radio 5 Live alongside Russell Fuller, and we'll have, obviously, Simon Briggs from The Telegraph making regular inserts into the tennis podcast. We will be bringing shows to you whenever we can. Can't exactly promise when, but knowing us, it'll be every day. We'll try our best. But thanks for listening, and we'll speak to you soon.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.